Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm convening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Monday, March 22nd. We have three items on our agenda: an informational meeting followed by two public hearings. I plan on taking the items in order unless there are legislators with us to testify who need to leave right away. But before we do that, would you please call the roll?
Representative Levy?
Excused. I had been communicating with her. I'm not sure where she is right this second. I hope she's able to join us. And pardon me, before you continue the roll call, I see someone on the screen. For video and microphone on, could we please have only committee members at this time? Okay, continue with the roll, please.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Excused, and he will be joining us shortly.
Representative Smith Warner is excused. Vice Chair Pham.
Vice Chair Pham, present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke, present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Present by video. Thank you for that. Before I open the informational meeting, do we have any legislators with us to testify on House Bill 3244? I'm not aware of any right now. And I'm not hearing any. Okay. I'm opening the informational meeting. An update on the Oregon income tax return filing. Mr. Alanak, last week we heard some news from the federal government. And will you please introduce this topic for us?
Sure. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Chris Alanak, Legislative Revenue Office. To follow up on that question, there had been several press releases from the IRS that they had moved the April 15th filing deadline to May 17th, and Oregon usually follows suit. So we have the Department of Revenue here. We have Marjorie Taylor and Ben Gilley from DOR to provide the committee with an update on that situation.
Thank you. Department of Revenue.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Marjorie Taylor, Legislative Director for the Department of Revenue. Indeed, this is a very complex tax season. And in addition to the extension of the filing deadline, we also have the impacts of the American Rescue Plan Act that currently the department is navigating with regard to our individual tax filers and how they need to comply with that new directive from the IRS. The agency is also waiting for some clear directives from the IRS, and we anticipate those coming down in the next several days, at which time we'll take formal action, especially with regard to the extension of the filing deadline, where our director, Betsy Imholt, will have to issue a director's order that will be filed with the Secretary of State to ensure that our new filing deadline of May 17th, 2021 will be in place. However, as I said, we are navigating a variety of complex issues for this tax year, and I do have Ben Gilley with me from the Personal Income Tax Division so that he can help explain a little bit about how we are anticipating the needs of our taxpayers, some of the communication that we do need to do with our taxpayers, and how we're anticipating their needs and trying to approach this so that our lowest income taxpayers will be helped to the best extent possible as soon as possible.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Marjorie. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ben Gilley, and I'm with the Personal Income Tax Program at the Department of Revenue, and I'm here to give you an update on the department's response to two things. Again, as Marjorie had mentioned, the IRS extension of due date and what we are doing administratively to implement that, and then a little bit about what you've LRO had reported last week on the unemployment income exclusion that was provided by the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. So starting with the extension process, again, it benefits the department and taxpayers administratively when we are in step with the IRS. And so immediately after their announcement, again, Director Imhold informed us that of her intent to follow suit and extend Oregon's tax filing due date for individuals to May 17th, 2021. And again, we are still waiting to see the official IRS notice, and that is necessary in order for us to complete the director's order, so we ensure that we are providing the same extension to the same population that the Internal Revenue Service is doing. The good news about, so immediately after that announcement, we did send a press release out to the media, to taxpayers, informing them our intent to do that, as well as informed directly the tax professional community and the software partners who will be updating the tax filing software that taxpayers use and professionals use to file correctly. So the good news is, again, we've done this recently as last year, where we did extend to July 15th, as all of you recall. And so the trail has already been blazed for us. And so what we have done is we've already formed a team within the agency to begin administering the changes to the processing system, to the forms of publication. We had some FAQs that we had posted on our website that addressed many of the questions that we were receiving over our tax filing phone center, call center. And so people can self-serve and look for that information themselves. We are anticipating, again, finalizing the director's order by the end of the month, so it can be filed with the Secretary of State and included in their bulletin for their April 1st edition. And so that's basically the updates that we have for extending the due date. Before I move on to the unemployment exclusion, I'll kind of pause there and see if committee members have any questions. Okay.
I'm not seeing any right now. Please go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So with respect to the unemployment exclusion, immediately upon passage of the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, the Internal Revenue Service immediately sent out information instructing taxpayers to wait. Before taking any action. So for those people who had already filed, they informed them, do not take any action, do not amend your return at this time. And for people who had not yet filed, they also gave them the same instructions. Primarily for the people who had not yet filed, the main reason for that is we would be working with our software vendors to update the tax filing software to take into account the exclusion so that the return could be properly filed correctly the first time. Since then, we've still been waiting for official guidance from the Internal Revenue Service on what they are going to do to remedy the people who have already filed. And what we have heard, although not official, is that they have a plan to automatically issue refunds to those who've already filed. And so for us, Director Imhold has asked us administratively to see what we can do to also provide similar relief where we don't put as much burden on the taxpayer as possible. We are continuing to look at options right now to see, to provide some flexibility. There are taxpayers already that would like to amend, and if they are using the appropriate updated software to do so, then we are not discouraging them from doing that. And if they do file that, we will process that correct, you know, timely. But we are also looking at ways administratively where we can calculate the refunds and try to go ahead and issue refunds. As Marjorie had mentioned, we are sensitive to the fact that some of these people are anticipating refunds and they need it quickly. And so we have found a way to identify affected taxpayers. And as the one pager that was included prior to this presentation shows, a breakdown of income levels. And so if we were to address doing automated refunds, then we would attempt to do it in an order where those who have the least amount of federal AGI would be remedied first. And so, again, we have continued to anticipate what the IRS is doing, and then also have consulted or will be consulting with other states that are looking at how they're also going to remedy people who have already filed. And so as we finalize our plans, we can give further update to this committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Taylor and Mr. Gilling. Committee, any questions? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the report from DOR. My question really is probably more to LRO than the Department of Revenue, in that by pushing the date back to the 18th of May, then I think the next week is the economic forecast is scheduled. So typically we get like 4 or 5 weeks between returns being due and the economic forecast. I'm just curious if there's going to be enough time for OEA to get information from DOR to do their analysis.
Vice Chair Reschke, Chair Nathanson, Chris Allenek. That's a very good question. The due date is now Monday, May 17th, and the forecast is coming out 2 days later, Wednesday the 19th. So it's even tighter than you were remembering. And the bottom line there is it creates more uncertainty in that forecast, because to your point, in a normal year, which is not this year and not last year, but prior to that, April 15th is the deadline. And then we always have a mid-May forecast, or usually have a mid-May forecast. So there's a, to your point, about call it 6 weeks between the two.
Yeah.
And with that, and we've always considered that a tight time frame, because there's always been a question about, well, can that mid-May forecast be moved to earlier, like early May, for legislative reasons, for budget reasons?
Right.
But there's always been this hesitancy to move that forecast date closer to the filing deadline, because right now with the 6 weeks, what we usually see with payments and refunds is, as you can imagine, as we get to the 15th, there's a bubble, if you will. And then by the time we get to early May, it's starting to level off. And so we're able to say with some degree of confidence that filing season is done, and this is what we thought refunds were going to be and payments were. Now we won't have, and it's more OEA, Mark and Josh, won't have that luxury of seeing of that 6 weeks. So it'll be tighter there with that forecast. Now, with respect to the end of the biennium, Now that 6 weeks, instead of happening in early May, is happening in early June.
Yeah.
So there's less concern that it affects the bottom line numbers for the biennium, although that still is, there could be some play there with some collections get moved from this biennium into next biennium. And we won't really know that until after the fact, but it's really those two pieces that we're still within that 6 weeks that we expected all of the activity or the bulk of it to occur this biennium. And that was one of the concerns if they had moved the deadline to say June 15th or even July 15th. July 15th is clearly into the next biennium, and June 15th is close enough that it could split it. But I guess I'm grasping for a silver lining here. But,
yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Any other questions for Department of Revenue or Mr. Alanak? I'm not seeing any. Thank you for the update. We appreciate that you're going through an awful lot right now, working maybe in some cases around the clock, trying to keep up. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm closing the informational meeting. We now have two public hearings. I'm opening the public hearing on House Bill 3244.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And it's House Bill 3244 is a bill that's relating to an existing tax credit. It's one of Oregon's auction tax credits, this one in regards to the Film and Video Office and those auction tax credit proceeds going to support the Oregon Production Investment Fund. And again, these Oregon Production Investment Funds, or OPIF funds, are used then to encourage film and television production in Oregon by making rebate payments to qualifying productions. But so what House Bill 3244 is doing is it's increasing the maximum amount of the tax credits. Right now, there is a limit in place for a fiscal year of $14 million for these tax credits that can be auctioned, and House Bill 3244 would be increasing that $14 million to $20 million per year. And that would apply to fiscal years beginning on or after July 1st, 2021.
Committee, any questions or clarifications you would like from LRO before we begin our witness list? I'm not seeing any. Before I start the hearing, I would like to mention that between this bill and the other, well, combined, there are at least 17 people signed up to testify. I would very much like to get through all of the testimony today, and I believe we can. I'm hoping that the people who are chiefly responsible for writing the bill and explaining it could take maybe, let's say, 3 to 5 minutes each, and that anyone else after that try to keep your remarks to 3 minutes each. I think that should allow us ample time to finish the public hearing for both bills. We'll give it a try. Our witness list for House Bill 3244 has two legislators to start out, Representative Bynum and Representative Nose. Representative Bynum, could you start, please?
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. My name is Janelle Bynum, and I proudly represent House District 51, which includes East Portland and Happy Valley. I will submit my full written comments for the record in the interest of time, but I just wanted to share with you how excited I am to support this bill. This is the first revenue committee bill that I've ever supported, but I wanted to share what was really important to me about this proposal. House Bill 3244 would increase the maximum amount of tax credits so that the state can capture a larger amount of film production here in Oregon. And I think this is really important as we try to grow our economy, grow good family wage jobs, and showcase all that is beautiful and wonderful about Oregon. We had a few years ago, Everything Sucks, I think was the name of the production that was done in my district. And now we also have had Chad and Shrill that were also filmed in House District 51. So I'm proud to put my other thoughts on the record in written form, but I just wanted to say how really excited I am for the arts, how really excited I am for good family wage jobs. And of course, I want Oregon to be the new West Coast destination for film and production in the United States. So thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Representative Bynum. Representative Nose.
I'm here. Can you hear me okay, Madam Chair?
I can hear you.
All right.
And we see you as well.
All right, right on. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Nose, and I'm the state representative for Inner Southeast Portland and the little sliver of Northeast Portland that I also have. I'm already back in front of you. I feel like I'm joining the Revenue Committee, and I believe you have an opening. So, Madam Speaker, if you're listening, I just want to give a few brief remarks in support of House Bill 3244, which, as you heard, would increase the maximum amount of tax credits for certified film production development here in our state from $14 million to $20 million. Colleagues, this tax credit program is not only good for Oregon's economy, but it also adds to the rich culture of Oregon's film industry across their state. And I suspect that Representative Bynum shared some of the remarks about places where videos have and film production has occurred, some of the different programs that we've been lucky to host, and maybe the jobs that have been created. Now, all these shows combined, it's estimated that over $61 million has been spent in our state and over 600 jobs have been created. And as we work to get our economy back on track and ensure that Oregonians are able to work, being one of the most important focuses of our 2021 session, I can't think of a better time to increase this tax credit for certified film production development contributions. Our constituents in our economy have taken massive hits in the past year, and this is a solid way to help them recover. Now, I know some of my constituents probably disagree with me, but probably the show that really helped put us on the map in a lot of ways is Portlandia. And sometimes we disagree with the way that that show has portrayed us, but I do find the show, I found the show to be hilarious, and sometimes a spot on, albeit exaggerate, representation of some of the quirky things that Portlanders do, particularly the Portlanders who live in my area of the world. Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you've never watched the Allergy Pride episode, you should watch it, as it's hilarious. And yes, I'm a person with allergies and a person who has a sense of humor. In addition, Oregon continues to be a world-leading destination for stop-motion animation, with four animated feature films currently in production in the state, including Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, and he is one of the premier directors in the world for this sort of thing. The point I'm trying to make is that this bill does great things for our state, and it's critical that it passes. Lastly, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I am someone who has been and is often critical of tax breaks. My time on this committee in years past and my examination of this credit throughout that time has made me take credits on a more case-by-case basis. Sometimes a credit is a more efficient way to offer an incentive or spend tax dollars, and this is especially true in this case. Candidly, committee members, if we don't do this, offer these kind of breaks, and make up for it in income taxes and hotel taxes and taxes paid, then our state will not be able to compete for this kind of work. It will go elsewhere, and the infrastructure that we have built for this kind of work, it will go away. To my fellow Democrats, if you want to stop the tax break chasing game, then we need to get governors in the United States to enter into a blood oath and a trust compact, because otherwise, when we have to compete for jobs and businesses from other states, we have to be willing, I would say, on a case-by-case strategy to consider this approach. And I will tell you, I think this one is one that passes the test and should absolutely be considered. And that's my testimony, Madam Chair. I'm very passionate about this credit and about Portlandia.
Thank you, Representative Nose. Some of us remember the several seasons of Grimm as well.
Yep.
Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If this does go forward, I'm expecting to see the Bynum and Nose show. I don't know if that's a comedy or a drama, but I'm really expecting something like that. So.
Well, we do like to ride in her car. It's a much nicer car than mine, actually, and jam out to 80s videos. So that is something we've done on occasion.
Carpool karaoke.
Yes, exactly.
Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I would just like to note to our Portland legislators that we have a very active film industry in Southern Oregon. Most recently, the film Phoenix, Oregon, won a number of awards, and it was actually filmed in Rep. Reschke's district of Klamath Falls. Why, I can't exactly explain that, but we see this industry thriving in many different parts of the state and bringing benefits to all kinds of communities.
That's correct. And I suspect you have people that will testify more in depth, Madam Chair, and members of the committee who will underscore Rep. Marsh's point.
Yes, we have a number of people signed up, and I think we're going to hear the story.
All right. I'll see you on a Zoom near you, Representative Bynum. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Reps Bynum and Nose.
All right, I'm going back to work.
Our next speaker will be Tim Williams, and after that, we will hear from John Powell, Jerry McDonald, and John Calhoun. And then after that, we will hear from Gary Kalt, Lana Vinker, and Devin Theofantau. So, Tim Williams, please.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I have some slides that we put up if I could. I submitted them earlier. Hopefully they're there.
I did not know about that. I will ask LRO, do you have them available?
We're looking at it right now, Madam Chair.
Sorry about that. Sorry for the notification problem. My fault.
While we're looking for that, Mr. Williams, we can either pause while we look for them and let someone else speak, or you can speak without the slides. It's your choice.
I will speak without the slides, and if they catch up to me, I will utilize them. Thank you very much, if that's okay. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Spam and Reschke, members of the committee, my name is Tim Williams. I'm the Executive Director of Oregon Film, the State Film and Media Economic Development Office. HB 3244 would expand the funding for the Oregon Production Investment Fund, or OPIF, from $14 million per year to $20 million, as was reflected in the governor's recommended budget. Our film and media incentive programs yield jobs, spending, economic recovery, and knock-on effects to other industries. That's the wrong one. That's our economic development report. There's another one that I had submitted that said Oregon Film slides for verbal. So I don't need that one. That's up now. Thank you. Our media incentive programs yield jobs, spending, economic recovery, and knock-on effects to other industries, even though those same programs are in the bottom third of the other 32 states that have these incentive programs. And that's because people want to work here. We have a program that has grown over time and therefore remains grounded and sustainable, and with programs focused solely on locally produced projects and regional production. We can continue that growth with an expansion of the annual funding for the program since we regularly exhaust all funding that's available prior to the end of our fiscal year. This will be especially valued now because of recovery potential Terrific. Thank you. Those are the slides. If you can go to number two, that would be great. Thank you. We can continue that growth with an expansion of the annual funding since we regularly exhaust all of our funding that's available to the end of our fiscal year. This will be especially valuable now because of the recovery potential it has on both economically across connected industries in terms of marketing the state at a time when no other industry is doing that. The OPIF program is funded through an online auction of state tax credits, purchased at a minimum rate of 90% of face value. Next slide, please. I have placed an updated economic development report from the Northwest Economic Research Center at PSU into OLIS. That was the one that was just up earlier. This report builds on the data collected in our last report. Overall, the report shows a high percentage of spending on Oregon-based labor, in addition to goods and services bought or rented from Oregon-based companies. Next slide. In addition, the NERC report also shows strong overall economic output for the program spanning several years. As a specific note, you'll notice a drop-off in output between 2017 and 2018, and this was due to three long-term series coming to an end in the same fiscal year. That would be the aforementioned Grimm, Portlandia, and also the Librarians. Altogether, these three series shot 18 seasons in Oregon. Recovering from this single-year event has been at the forefront of our efforts, and we have since been working with new series-based projects to replace them, including Shrill, Trinkets, and the Birch. Next slide, please. I also want to point out the steady upward trend in wages and small business growth directly associated with our industry that, in general, ties out with the gradual increase of our incentive programs since they were initially introduced in 2005. Next slide. After shutting down completely in March due to the pandemic, the film and media industry began work on a comprehensive plan to return to work in a safe and conscientious manner. With the help and direct input of the OMPA, local unions, guilds, small businesses, and the local workforce, a set of health and safety protocols were developed in May and put into effect starting in June. The projects that have returned to production in the interim have created jobs, spending, and knock-on support for related industries, including the badly hit hospitality industry. In the last two quarters of 2020, track production spending returned to the levels that we tracked in the last two quarters of 2019. Next slide, please. In fact, this industry's unique power to economically stimulate other related industries because of its interconnection was highlighted in the work that was being produced in the post-pandemic period. These included hotel room nights being paid for, large venues not otherwise being utilized, being converted into offices and stage spaces, and production spending moving into various parts of the state. By way of example, the Bravo series Top Chef shot six of its 14 episodes in locations outside of Portland and utilized more than 7,000 hotel room nights in various locations during its production schedule last fall. Next slide. Every month, we get numerous calls for productions asking to base here, both from local producers and outside companies. Some we have to turn away because our funding runs out. There are many factors that make a production go to another state and shoot. Some end up not shooting at all. But a rough estimation of spending on projects that contact us but end up going elsewhere is in the range of $75 million to $175 million annually. There are many other inquiries beyond this. Even during the pandemic, our OPIF funds were exhausted. Next slide. In 2017, we instituted a regional program that was aimed at encouraging film and media production in all parts of the state. Here's a map that outlines just the local accommodation spending that we have tracked through these various programs, finding locations throughout Oregon. These numbers do not include spending that is being done with local vendors like food, gas, taxis, restaurants, and dry cleaning. In just the past 2 to 3 months, we have seen production work in Heard River, the North Coast, as well as a large feature film that based itself in Gold Beach for 3 weeks shooting in Coos and Curry counties. Next slide. I also wanted to point out the longer term benefits of retaining and attracting these projects here in Oregon. The first step is the direct spending to local businesses and jobs for local crews and talent. But beyond that, there's also the notoriety and marketing potential these projects bring to the state. At the moment, this industry is creating content that sells Oregon internationally on a weekly basis. Visitors still flock to locations in Astoria, St. Helens, and Brownsville every year to celebrate films like The Goonies, Halloween Town, and Stand By Me. Capitalizing on this, along with partners like Travel Oregon, we have created the Oregon Film Trail with locations around the state that encourages film tourism to iconic filming locations in places like Athena, Klamath Falls, Joseph, Eugene, Burns, and Ashland. To our knowledge, this is the first of its kind in the U.S., and there are more than 30 stops already placed on the trail, with another 5 more signs set to be installed over the coming months. Next slide. I also wanted to take a moment to celebrate a few successes in this past year. In a year with a great deal of uncertainty around film distribution and audiences, two Oregon-made films were number one at the U.S. box office last summer, while a third film is garnering a great deal of awards attention. The Rental, shot in Bandon, and Phoenix, Oregon, as Rep. Marsh pointed out, was shot in Klamath Falls. Both held the top position at the box office in the summer of 2020, with Phoenix making a pivot after the wildfires devastated their local and namesake community to donate ticket sales directly to the recovery. In addition, the Elkton shot First Cow has received numerous awards and nominations from critics and organizations alike. Also, the Ben-produced documentary film The Last Blockbuster is currently one of the nationwide top 10 releases on Netflix. And lastly, I want to point out Oregon's place in the worldwide leader of stop-motion animation, as Rep. Nose mentioned. We currently have times four feature animated films in production here in Oregon, and this state is recognized as a world leader in that production art form. Next slide. These tax credits have been working well since they were implemented. They have gradually increased, which has led to a growing and permanent industry. But Oregon is in competition with at least 30 other states and all the provinces of Canada to attract and retain production works at all levels: film, television, animation, commercials, interactive, branded content, and more. There is a strong local ecosystem of creators and small businesses that rely on this industry for their own growth. Having a multi-year program, something that is only achievable through a tax credit system, is also something that is important to producers and studios looking to base their multi-year projects here in Oregon, most particularly television series and animated features, two distinct areas our state has done well in over the last few years. In addition, our state has the advantage of mostly playing Oregon for Oregon on screen, which means that Oregon is marketed to a global audience on a regular basis. Removing or scaling down this program would immediately reduce Oregon's competitiveness in this effort and result in a loss of projects, production spending, and jobs. In fact, because of our incentive programs, Oregon was immediately able to compete for Oregon and U.S.-based production work looking to safely resume this past summer and fall. The increase to the annual funding for the OPIF program contained in HB 3244 will allow us to increase both the retention of local projects and productions, as well as the increase of our recruitment abilities to bring production work into all regions of the state. Thank you very much, and I will answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Williams, for the presentation. Committee, any questions for this presenter before I move to the next panel? Not seeing any right now. Mr. Williams, can you stay around just in case there's a question later?
I will, Chair Nathanson. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, John Calhoun, John Powell, and Jerry McDonald.
Chair Nathanson?
Yes. Mr. Calhoun?
Vice Chair Fams and Reschke and members of the committee. My name is John Calhoun. I'm here today representing Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who support a rational and equitable tax code. I will be very brief and will only be reminding you of principles you've already heard from us before. Tax Fairness Oregon understands that the film industry forces states to compete for subsidies, as Rep. Noss mentioned. The question for the legislature then is how to do it and for how much. The request today is for an increase in this tax subsidy, not the elimination or starting one. This raises three questions. Why should we increase a subsidy for this industry above existing levels set in recent legislative sessions, while other needs like homelessness are at a crisis level? Two, why should we issue tax credits for sale when they are now likely to be sold at a discount from the value of the credit? That means the cost of the Oregon Treasury is greater than the funds going to the industry. The last tax credit auction in December in Oregon by the Department of Revenue began bidding at 90% of the credit value. Third, given the limitations in the American Rescue Plan regarding net revenue reductions, will this increase in tax credits result in offsetting reduction in federal funds? We don't think we know the answer to that yet. Once you decide if you want to increase subsidies to this specific industry, the second and third questions lead to an answer that legislators consider the use of grants, not tax credits, for this purpose. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Calhoun. Committee, any questions? John Powell.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Reschke and Vice Chair Pham, members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Powell, representing the Motion Picture Association, testifying today in support of House Bill 3244, which, as you've heard, provides a limited incentive for film production projects in our state. I want to convey from the industry that there is great interest and enthusiasm for filming in Oregon. Incentive programs such as this one you are considering today certainly are an important factor that film producers analyze when deciding where to film their projects. Many other states have incentive programs that are much more generous than what Oregon offers. A couple of examples are New Mexico, which offers $110 million annually in incentives, as well as New Jersey, that just last year increased its incentive program to $100 million annually. So it is important to at least maintain this program and, if possible, expand it a bit to be able to compete for future film projects. Here are just a couple of recent examples that have been touched on previously today that have filmed in Oregon with some numbers of the economic impact they've made. NBC's Grimm series that was mentioned filmed in the state for 6 years and employed 962 full-time equivalent positions who earned $297 million in wages over that period. In addition, that project purchased goods and services from over 400 local businesses during that time period, including transportation services, lighting equipment, and hardware, to the tune of $431 million. Another recent example was the Warner Brothers production of the show Shrill for Hulu that filmed in Oregon for 3 years. In just its most recent year, the project paid $7.5 million in wages and $3.5 million in purchases of goods and services from local businesses. I illustrate these examples to show Oregon benefits economically and from a tax revenue standpoint by orders of magnitude over any costs related to this incentive program when we are able to attract these film production projects. To conclude, the Motion Picture Association urges the committee to support extending this modest incentive program. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Powell. Committee members, any questions? Next is Jerry McDonald. I'm not seeing Mr. McDonald in the list of people connected right now in the room. We'll come back to Mr. McDonald. We'll try again in a few minutes. The next speakers are Gary Coote, Lana Vinker, and Devin Tao. Mr. Kaut. Gary Kaut.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson and members of the committee. My name is Gary Kaut. I am an Ashland-based producer. I'm also the founder and previous executive director of Southern Oregon Film and Media, a local professional networking association, which is now goes by Film Southern Oregon. I'm here to speak to you in support of 3244. As a producer here in Southern Oregon, I have seen firsthand the benefit that the incentive has brought to our region. Starting all the way back in 2005 on the film Conversations with God, all the way up to most recently the movie Phoenix, Oregon, which, as Representative Marsh mentioned, is called Phoenix, Oregon, but it filmed in Klamath Falls, and I can actually shed some light on why that is the case. The filmmakers went on a statewide search for a bowling alley that would be amenable to closing for a number of days in order to film large portions of the film, and the bowling alley that stepped up to the plate was the one in Klamath Falls. But what gave the filmmakers, the director, his wife, the producer, myself, and others, the confidence to bring that production to Klamath Falls was, in fact, a direct result of the incentive that has benefited us. In other words, we had reliable crew, reliable casts, we had a base of equipment that we could use down here in Southern Oregon, far from the industry base up in Portland, in order to make our film, make it to a high level of professionalism and production value. And even Klamath Falls benefited from a movie a few years ago for what was called Brother Nature, which starred Bill Pullman, Rita Wilson, the wife of Tom Hanks, and the whole and many cast members from Saturday Night Live. Klamath Falls has also seen the impact of the incentive. Movies like that, Brother Nature, Phoenix, Oregon, have dropped well over $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, and these are low-budget productions. They don't quite add up to some of those numbers of the episodic television shot up in Portland. But these are significant numbers down here in Southern Oregon, of course, because our economy is a bit smaller, both the film economy and the general economy. And I think that's also what really makes the incentive important here in Southern Oregon, is because we are not the center of filmmaking, we don't have studios that are built from the ground up to house productions. We don't have equipment houses that have all the latest and greatest. We kind of have to put the production together with what's available. So we're reaching more out into the general community for car rentals and caterers and motorhome rentals and home and business rentals for our locations. So really, we're spreading the money that we are spending on productions across a really broad range of the economy down here. And then in terms of the crew base, again, we don't have the size and the depth that Portland has, but for every production that comes down here and a production that is here because the incentive has provided it the valuable funds that it needs in order to get made, then our crews are gaining necessary experience. They're gaining credits for their resumes. They're meeting other professionals in the industry so that as every subsequent film eyes a place like Southern Oregon to film, then they can be more confident in knowing that we have qualified crews, experienced crews, available casts. And, you know, and the more these people work, the more money they make, the more they're going to self-invest in equipment, in cameras, in lighting gear. So it really has a profound, measurable and snowball effect down here. And I'm confident that with the increase in the incentive, it's going to capture more productions. It's going to bring more productions to the state, more of which are going to look to Southern Oregon. We have quite a good reputation down here. One thing that you may have become aware of through our efforts to spread the word about this is Southern Oregon, Ashland in particular, but that's really just kind of a representative of Southern Oregon, has been named one of the best places to live and work as a filmmaker by Movie Maker Magazine for 8 years in a row, including this past year. And we have placed as high on that list as number one. So we would like to, I'd like to answer any questions if you had them. And also, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Kaut. Lana, you're next.
All right, just making sure I'm not on mute. Chair Nathanson and Vice Chair Spam and Reschke and members of the committee. First of all, my name is Lana Vinker. I'm the president and founder of Cast Iron Studios, which is a film and television casting company in Portland. For the last 21 years, we've been hiring the local professional actors in thousands of commercials, episodic series, and movies that have shot in Oregon. And I wanted to thank you, Chair Nathanson, for sponsoring this bill, HB 3244, as well as the co-sponsors who were here earlier. Here's why I'm excited that you are considering this bill at this time. I remember coming out of the last recession, and we had a pretty rough time financially. And right around then, the legislature voted to increase OPIF. And immediately, it brought a flood of work to the state. I was able to not only get my business back on track, but we had our busiest year to date. And every time the fund has increased, my business has grown. My staff and I have been able to buy houses, take care of our families, save for retirement, all thanks to the Oregon Production Incentive Fund. And so now we find ourselves at another one of these important crossroads where people are hurting and need work. Small businesses need cash, tourism is floundering. And we have, due to the pandemic, this backlog of film and TV production just waiting to get underway and deciding right now where are they going to shoot. So if we play our cards right and increase OPIF, we can attract those millions of dollars and all those jobs to our state. And we talk about like the construction industry being shovel ready. Our industry is shutter ready. In other words, if we increase OPIF today, by tomorrow, the film office can be attracting production here, and I could be staffing up by Friday. That's how fast it goes. And if you've ever been on a film or television set, you know it looks like a big construction site with carpenters and electricians and truck drivers running around. These are great jobs with solid pay, overtime, benefits. But we also provide those clean, green, high-tech, creative jobs of the future, like they were talking about in animation, virtual reality, video games, the kind of jobs that will keep our college grads here working in state and keeping those jobs local. So I just really believe that the Oregon Production Incentive Fund can help us spring back from the pandemic, not only by creating jobs, but tourism. And it'll bring a lot of culture and vitality to our hard-hit communities. And I thank you for supporting it and for supporting our industry.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll hear from Devin.
Hi, good afternoon, Chair Nathanson and other members of the committee. Thank you very much. My name is Devin Vifantau. I am an indie film director and producer here in Portland, Oregon. My small film production company is No Sunrise Wasted. Just wanted to testify in support of HB 3244. I've a gay Asian American immigrant filmmaker, and I actually made a career change about 6 years ago into film. And since then, I went from film projects from $0 to $10,000 to $150,000, which is my most recent feature documentary, Who Is on Top. And now I'm working on a feature thriller called Half Sisters at $350,000. This will be my second film being a part of the local OPIF program and the ROPIF program. And without the support of the state, and I wouldn't have been able to tell these stories about the LGBTQ community and also BIPOC related stories that these two films will feature. On a side note, as I'm continuing to level up in my film career, I'm able to increase my spend and my hiring and production values. My other people that had given the support, Gary and Lana, they're actually the leaders in our state, and they compete even on a national basis. So I hope as I can afford larger budgets, I get a chance to hire them and be able to work with them. A big part of that is just because of the support from the state for me to be able to continue to level up in my film productions. So in conclusion, I definitely want to thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I want to encourage you all to vote yes on HB 3244.
Thank you for your testimony. Committee members, any questions for Gary, Lana, or Devin? I don't see any. Gary, Lana, and Devin, thank you all three for your testimony. We have one final person, Jerry McDonald.
*6 to unmute, just as a reminder.
Good afternoon. This is Terry McDonald. I'm testifying on behalf of House Bill 3302.
That's not the bill. Did you wish to testify on 3302? You're signed up on 3244.
I beg your pardon. That is incorrect. So if I've missed my opportunity, that's that.
No, 3302, we haven't heard that one yet. Is that the one you're waiting to testify on?
That is correct.
Okay. Could you please mute yourself and we'll, let's see. Committee, we're going to stand at ease for a minute now.
Broadcasting.
Thank you, everyone, for that pause. We're making sure that we have our witness registration lists straight. I have no other names signed up to testify on House Bill 3244. I want to make sure that the committee has had an opportunity to ask questions, if you had any. Representative Smith, and welcome to the meeting. I know you arrived a while ago. Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. So, Chris, have you had a chance to look at the hard economics of the tax credit and determine what the net benefit is to the state? I, like other colleagues, have been supportive of this, and I continue to be. I'm just curious what the hard numbers really look like for every dollar provided in tax credit. What does the state gain in return?
There is we haven't done that work directly ourselves. There is a report in OLIS that was put out, I think, by Tim Williams at NERC, did an update of that kind of study. But Kyle Easton is on this bill, so I'm going to give him a second to see if he can weigh in and provide any additional information.
And Mr. Easton, I'd ask that you keep it brief because we have, let's see, 8 people signed up to testify on the next bill, and I'm hoping that we can get through them all today.
Sure, Nathanson. I'll withdraw my question, and if whoever can answer that will just shoot me an email, that'd be wonderful.
And Representative Smith, if we determine that we're proceeding with this bill, I hope that we will present that in a public meeting to the entire committee. Wonderful. Is that all right?
Oh, that's wonderful. I'll go back on mute so we can process here.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Mr. Easton, did you have a 30-second answer for us?
Yes, Madam Chair. I was just going to say, in terms of the standard tax credit review, this credit would be up in the 2023 session. So that's when we prepare it as part of our tax credit report of those that are expiring in the upcoming biennium. So at this time, as Chris just mentioned, we haven't done a formal review on this credit yet, but it would be scheduled for 2 years from now.
Thank you. And we'll look forward to additional information. No other questions on this bill. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3244. I'm opening the public hearing on House Bill 3302.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, once again, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And yes, House Bill 3302 is a measure that would create a new income tax credit. And this would be a tax credit that's available to individuals and corporations that make contributions to a tax-exempt workforce training organization. So the terms are defined within the bill related to the new credit. The amount of the credit would be the least of the amount of the contribution, either $500 for an individual or up to $5,000 for a corporation, or the taxpayer's tax liability, which just means the credit is not a refundable credit, but it would allow unused credit amounts to be carried forward up to 3 succeeding tax years. And it does apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2021, and before January 1st, 2031.
Thank you. Committee, any questions or clarifications for LRO? For Mr. Easton. Okay, let's go to our witness list. But first, I'd like to remind people that if you can hold your remarks to 3 minutes or less, that would be helpful because I would really like to hear from all of you this afternoon. And we don't have quite 3 minutes per person available, but almost. And Representative Reschke, let's start with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham, and esteemed members of the House Committee on Revenue, for the record, My name is E. Warner Reschke, and I'm the state representative for the great people of Southern Klamath and Lake Counties, also known in legislative parlance as House District 56. Since the outbreak of the virus nearly a year ago and the lockdowns that followed, the unemployment rate in Oregon soared like we hadn't seen in a generation. As regulations are relaxed, the unemployment rate has declined somewhat, but remains at a stubborn 6% or higher. According to the Oregon Employment Department, recent numbers show 132,000 Oregonians remain on unemployment. The unemployment rate is more than just an economic factor. The data shows us that the unemployed and non-working individuals have higher rates of obesity, smoking, drug, and alcohol abuse, physical inactivity, and premature death. In addition, the lack of work, jobs, and employment creates a spirit of poverty, not one of accomplishment in the pursuit of dreams. The true cost of joblessness goes well beyond not getting a paycheck, as families are broken apart by the higher risks of divorce, substance abuse, and even suicide that arise or worsen with unemployment. House Bill 3302 is a way to help the jobless develop the skills necessary to re-enter the workforce. House Bill 3302 would provide a tax credit to individuals of up to $500 and up to businesses up to $5,000 who donate money directly to these nonprofit organizations that do job training. There's still work to be done on the bill to tighten up the definition of which nonprofits would qualify, as well what the term contribution means, but I'm more than willing to work on that here in the next couple of days. I want to thank the chair for allowing a public hearing on 3302. Following, you're going to hear from some people who have been at work at this space for over three decades. They are passionate about this work and understand the multiple benefits from helping someone move from being unemployed to employed and self-sustaining. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Reschke. Continuing with the witness registration list, I'm going to announce the names so that you can get ready. It will be Ted Abram, Robert Kingsett, Scott Bruin, Joy McGinnis, and I'll announce the next names after that. Ted Abram, please.
Madam Chair and committee members, can you hear me?
Yes, please go ahead.
I am Ted Abram, and I have submitted a document, which can you tell me if you've received it?
Why don't you just proceed with your testimony, please? We have not a whole lot of time this afternoon.
Well, but I did present a document that I understand will be distributed.
Madam Chair, it is in OLIS.
Thank you. So we'll be able to read it in its entirety. Great.
So what I want to do is just talk about one small area, and we'll go, and you can read it. At the very end of the document, I talk about the Acton Institute. The Acton Institute and a book called Transforming Welfare. The Acton Institute was founded by Father Sirico, and it believes very strongly in subsidiarity. And this is a Catholic doctrine. We are not a Catholic organization. We do have Catholic board members. But this is subsidiarity is a very strong belief and a personal belief to me that organizations and people that are the closest to the people in need of assistance are by far the best. And the end of the document talks about the values and judgments creating social incentives for good behavior. And the professor is Glenn Lowry of Boston University, who is world renowned. And I encourage you to read that, and I'll be very happy to answer any questions. But Klamath Works, we are true believers in subsidiarity. We are working directly with the people, and we are the ones that understand and have the ability to attend to both their moral and their physical needs. So I hope you will take a very good look at that this document. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abram. Robert Kingsett, you're next. Do we have Robert with us on the phone?
Madam Chair, I believe he was going to submit something via written testimony. He may have signed up accidentally to testify verbally, but let's go on to the next one. And if he comes around, we can pick him up.
Thank you, Representative Reschke. Scott Bruin.
Okay, well, good afternoon, Chair Nathanson and members of the Revenue Committee. My name is Scott Bruin, and I'm the Director of Tax and Fiscal Policy of Oregon Business and Industry. OBI is a member-led business trade association. We have 1,600 members and employ more than 330,000 Oregonians. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm testifying in support of House Bill 3302. The need for the benefits of workforce training and education have long been understood. Clearly, however, the times we are now in make the need for accessible workforce training all the more important. At the peak of the economic storm caused by COVID last year, more than 300,000 Oregonians were out of work. And while many of those jobs have now been recovered, unemployment in Oregon still remains stubbornly high, as Representative Reschke mentioned. COVID has changed our lives, of course, and it's changed the way we work. Even with the return to normalcy, many of the jobs lost to COVID will simply not be coming back. Then there is the larger macro environment, COVID notwithstanding. We overuse the phrase to a point where it may sound cliche, but it's true nonetheless. We live and we work in a global economy. Technology, job types, and job skills are changing constantly and, in fact, need to change constantly. If we are not keeping up, if we're not learning and growing, then we are falling behind. The issues around COVID, job loss, and Oregon's place in the global economy are bigger than one bill, of course, but House Bill 3302 is a very important piece in the larger puzzle. A tax credit incentive designed to support and enhance job training and career learning is good for Oregon workers and their families and their communities. It's also very good and, in fact, necessary for Oregon businesses, which must compete in every corner of the globe and absolutely depend on a well-trained Oregon workforce. For all of these reasons, OBI encourages you to support House Bill 3302. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bruin, for the testimony. Next, we will have Jody Weiser, followed by Joy McInnes and LeVar Moore. Jody Weiser.
Representative Nathanson and members of the committee, my name is Jody Weiser. I'm here today as a volunteer for Tax Fairness Oregon, a network of volunteers who support a rational and equitable tax code. This is a well-designed bill that really does a good job of attending to the particulars of what they're trying to accomplish. The reader can easily understand the goals and the mechanisms that can be used to help citizens stuck between jobs make a successful transition. There is another, less well-designed pilot project piece of legislation proposed this session that seems to be aimed at the same goal. Unfortunately, we cannot support the idea of 100% tax credit as the correct funding mechanism for this. This concept instead should compete in ways and means and be managed by a department which can require reporting that would allow the legislature to assess whether the mechanism is attaining its goals other than supporting some nonprofits, which are allowed to spend 50% of their funding in overhead, an amount that would steer most normal donors to nonprofits away from that particular set of nonprofits. Frequently, over more recent years, we've seen the idea of a tax credit for donations, in this case, 100% tax credit. The donation to a 501c3 nonprofit is generally a gift, which the tax system allows as an itemized deduction. 100% tax credit really means that the taxpayer is not making a gift at all. In fact, they're directing their taxes to particular purposes. This isn't fair to other taxpayers, and it removes the legislature from making budget decisions, both of which we find at cross purposes to the ideas of good tax policy. I quoted something that comes out of the ORS about tax quality, about tax fairness, that, you know, is what we're supposed to live by. And to say that a donation is really just a choice about where your tax dollars go isn't fair to the rest of us who actually support all of what the legislature chooses to spend money on. So I would recommend that you look at this as a grant program that is available through a department of the state, and that it be run as a pilot, as the other bill suggests, so we can see whether the idea is worthy of more funding or not. I think many of our colleges, community colleges particularly, offer similar kinds of services at this time. Thank you, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you for the testimony. Joy McGinnis.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the House Committee on Revenue. My name is Joy McGinnis, and I'm here to testify in favor of House Bill 3302. I'm the Executive Director of Klamath Works Incorporated, a 501c3 not-for-profit organization located in Klamath Falls. We are dedicated to assisting the hardest to serve individuals in our community to find jobs and sustainable employment with career potential. We opened our doors in October of 2016, and in the 4.5 years we've been open, we've assisted 1,500 participants obtain over 937 jobs. We offer job training, a variety of life and job skill educational modules, supported paid work opportunities, assistance in removing challenges and barriers to employment, customized job search, mentoring, and post-employment counseling. But most importantly, we offer our participants intensive one-on-one job coaching. Our job coaches and work experience supervisors get to know our participants and establish long-term relationships with them. They are there to share the exhilaration of landing a first or new job, cheer each wage increase, plan for future employment, and celebrate the exciting but sobering moment when our participants strike out on their own with little or no public assistance. Our job coaches are also there to soften the blow when our participants lose a job, experience a rough or a bad job interview, suffer economic hardships, lose housing or transportation, or slip back into drug or alcohol dependency. Our participants are often just out of jail or prison, alcohol or drug rehabilitation, homeless, or have lost public assistance benefits. We work closely with Klamath County Parole and Probation, District 11 Department of Human Services, and a myriad of social services and medical and mental health providers throughout our community. When we began, our primary focus was on employment and assisting our participants to obtain jobs, and it is still our primary mission. However, we've learned getting a job is often the easy part, but keeping the job and finding a better job with career potential are often far more difficult. Our participants have largely not been in the job market or haven't been for many years and are often unprepared for the bewildering job market. To address these issues, we've developed new approaches. One of the most successful is our paid supported work positions for participants who are not ready for unsubsidized work. These supported work positions provide our participants with an environment in which they can learn the basics of employment. For example, showing up on time, getting along with supervisors and fellow employees, learning how to approach and complete a job assignment, and even how to manage family obligations while employed. Our job coaches and work experience supervisors are on site at each supported job site and provide supervision and intervention to make sure our participants are given every opportunity to be successful on the job. We now offer supported work opportunities in construction, landscaping and general maintenance, recycling and upcycling, and are actively planning on establishing retail opportunities. As you might guess, the services that we provide are not cheap. Our intensive one-on-one interactions with participants often span weeks and sometimes months. We've been fortunate to obtain contracts with the Department of Human Services and other areas, grant programs, but we are always in need of further funding. We've also, our supported work enterprises also provide income, and several nonprofit community organizations have provided grants. House Bill 3302, by allowing individuals and businesses to obtain a tax credit by donating to workforce development organizations, will provide a needed revenue source. Oregon and our Klamath Basin community are at a critical point. We have severe workforce shortages, particularly in the trades. These shortages have been exacerbated by COVID-19 pandemic. It's imperative that job training and workforce development organizations offer quality job training and retention services. House Bill 3302 is one revenue tool that will assist our efforts and the efforts of workforce organizations throughout Oregon. We heartily support House Bill 3302 and urge the House Committee and Revenue to support this measure. Thank you very much for your time. I'd be delighted to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. And committee members, I would very much like to hear from the last three speakers. I hope they can hold their comments to under 3 minutes each, because I'm going to ask you if you can please stay with us beyond the usual time of adjournment to hear the rest of the speakers. We can go a few minutes beyond. Next is LeVar Moore, then will be Alan Eberline and Jerry McDonald. LeVar Moore.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Pham and Reske, and members of the House Committee of Revenues. My name is LeVar Moore, and I'm here to testify in favor of HB 3302. I'm a work experience supervisor and the manager of the SOI assessment project at Klamath Works, Inc., located in Klamath Falls. As such, I am in a unique position to share my experiences in working directly with the hardest to serve individuals in our community. In addition, I would like to tell you briefly about an initiative that we have begun at Klamath Works that provides assessment and training to improve our clients' mental faculties and capabilities in the workforce. One initiative that is illustrative of the outside of the box work that we do at Klamath Works is the SOI project. SOI stands for Structure of Intellect, and the project is an assessment and learning tool for our participant that we have found to be very helpful for both the participant and for the Klamath Works staff. We learned of the SOI assessment program from federal judge Ann Aiken, who uses the program to assist those on parole and probation as they reenter society. She believes, and we also believe, that the program has made a significant and positive impact in our community and clients. SOI examines how individuals learn and processes information and translate that information into action. Through SOI assessment, we can identify an individual's strengths, assist them to choose a career or educational path that fits their interests and skill set. We can also provide individual training for areas where they may want to improve. This process builds self-esteem and helps individuals discover their true worth. The SOI assessment process and follow-up training is conducted with a special emphasis on building upon strengths and maintaining a positive attitude. Many of our clients have never heard that they are good at anything. Being able to point out their strengths and how they can utilize them towards a career is very empowering for individuals. Many who have participated in SOI programs have significant progress and improvement. Everything okay? Sorry, I thought I heard something. In improving comprehension and memory.
Yeah, I heard it too, and I apologize. I don't know what the interruption was, but please go ahead.
All right. The SOI process also informs Klamath Works staff about the SOI participant. It helps us understand their learning styles so we can become better teachers and assist upon being able to identify employment opportunities that will best suit the participant. Of course, our SOI project requires significant resources in terms of staff time and material. The assessment, for example, can take 4 hours to complete and another 5 hours to score and present to participant. Ongoing training can last up to 9 months. Klamath Works is very excited about the SOI project, but realizes that it is going to require additional resources to bring it to fruition. I believe that HB 3302, which offers tax credits to those who donate to a workforce development company, has the potential of enhancing our programs and our services to our participants. Thank you for your time and for allowing me to provide testimony in this matter. I urge you to vote HB 3302, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next is Alan Eberlein, and last is Jerry McDonald.
Yes, for the record, I'm Alan Eberlein. I'm one of the founders of Klamath Works and a current board member, and my testimony is very brief. I have just been very encouraged by the lives that have been changed as a result of our programs here. And the number of former welfare recipients, some from multi-generational welfare families, that are now productive members of the community and paying taxes. And I think it's obvious that the nonprofits can deliver these kind of services in a more cost-effective manner than government agencies, but all nonprofits seem to be having a great reduction in their donations at this point. And we need to stabilize this for not only our organization, but for others doing the same thing. I encourage you to give serious consideration to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Last speaker is Jerry McDonald.
Good afternoon, Chair Nathanson and committee members. This is Terry McDonald. I'm actually the director of Senior City Falls Society in Blaine County. And we support this measure largely because of the difficulty of getting resources to nonprofits, especially in rural Oregon. There was multiple barriers to employment that rural Oregon is seeing, and nonprofits not having sufficient resources. Finding new ways to get resources to those nonprofits to support this type of population and generational change is very important. So on behalf of another nonprofit that probably would not be interested in this particular measure, but very much wants to see redevelopment in rural Oregon, we support this measure.
Thank you for the testimony. And I've got it now. On the list, it was printed with a J as Jerry, but Terry, I know Terry. It's good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice, Chair Nathanson.
Committee members, are there any questions for the speakers who you've heard on this bill, 3302? Any questions for them? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To say any questions, but I do want to throw a couple bouquets of roses. One, I really greatly appreciate the good folks from KFAL coming and sharing a very articulate message. I want to hope folks in KFALs know just how fortunate they are to have Representative Reschke representing them. He does a fabulous job serving folks in KFALs and down in that part of the state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Committee, any other questions or comments before I close the public hearing on House Bill 3302?
Chair Nathanson, this is Pam Marsh. I have my hand up, but I think I'm in the visitor log because I'm on
it. Oh, it was further down. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. And this doesn't require an answer today, but I would love thoughts on it later on. I couldn't agree more that our nonprofits, especially in rural and less populated parts of the state, need support. Where I struggle is to know what isn't worthy. Clearly, programs that put people back to work are worthy. I would argue that programs that take care of children in that critical 0 to 5 year old category are worthy. I would argue that addiction treatment programs that help people get out of the worst point of their lives and into something better are worthy. I don't know where you stop or how you draw the lines as to say which one of these programs are best or which one of them will produce tangible social and economic value for their communities. So that's I just want to put that out there because that would be my struggle when looking at something like this.
Thank you, Representative Marsh. Any other comments or questions? I don't see any. I'm closing the public hearing on House Bill 3302. Mr. Alanak, final thoughts, observations, or things we need to know before ending our meeting?
I don't think so, Madam Chair. You've covered your agenda for the day. There are a couple of questions that we can we'll be following up with.
Okay. Thank you very much. Committee members, any final ideas, questions, or comments, announcements before we adjourn for the day? There's still a hand up from Representative Marsh. Do you have another comment?
I don't, Chair.
Okay. Thank you all. We're adjourned.